Before I start off, I'd like to acknowledge a few people. I don't have an acknowledgement slide. My friends at Copesan, who I talked to before I put this presentation together. I've listened to Rick Cooper, Mike Potter, Steve Kells, and I've taken a little bit from their presentations as well. So I've got to acknowledge them up front when they look up there and say, hey, that's something I talked about. But I thought it would be useful for everybody. But most of the stuff is from my working with a pest management company, and I've used that experience to build this presentation. Oops. Down. I've broken it down into these different steps, and we'll cover each step briefly. And the first one is, we talked about identification. A lot of this is going to be repetitious because people have talked about this. We know that we have to ID these bed bugs, but what I found from my experience is when there's something in the news or, you know, there's something in the paper that people start calling. And we've had cases where the guy goes out to inspect and he says, I've been bitten, and what you find are mustard seeds. And we've seen box elder bugs, and they see pictures of these bed bugs, and they look at box elder bugs, it's red, and they think they're bed bugs. So we had to go in and create something to charge for that. And this is something I have heard to supervisors in the field. They say, we've seen bed bugs, we know they're flat, they're round, they're oval. Then you see the fully fed ones, which are long, kind of cigar shaped, and they think it's a different species. And this has happened a few times. We know the difference between bat bugs and bed bugs and swallow bugs. So we get calls from these all the time. So what we've done is we've used the WDI, the wood destroying insect inspection form, and created a form. This is purely to help technicians when they go out in the field, and the same thing, look at a room above, below, both sides, look at potential harborage sites. And what we've done is we've created this report where it's a checklist, basically. We like to use checklists because when techs go in, they check off. And it's also good if there's a liability issue and they say, what did you look at? And they check off all this. And we've used this saying, okay, did they find any visible evidence? Did they find dead or live bed bugs? Or did they find, like, blood spots? And there should be one more. Oops. And the last one says, I know people say do a very thorough inspection, but time is money, and that you can spend a lot of time trying to find every single harborage spot. So what we've come up with is, if you do see a sign of bed bugs, any sign, we stop. And then we end up treating every potential and existing harborage. I know a lot of you may not agree with that, but that's something we followed. If you do sign, because you're not going to find every single spot. So if we find signs of activity, we assume there are more, and we treat every potential and existing harborage. We know the evidence of infestation, the eggs, the caskins, bite reactions, and not everybody reacts like we know. There was a house in Appleton where the little boy showed bite reactions, and the doctor said it could be bed bugs. We visited the house. Most of the bed bugs were in the parents' room, and they did not react at all. It was just this little boy that reacted, and his room did not have as many bed bugs. And his sister's room had bed bugs too. She didn't react. I've never smelt that odor. Usually the place smells even worse, and there's a lot of other smells, so you never see that. And we've seen this in a lot of places where you'll see most of the signs in one spot. This is a housing in Cincinnati, and there are a lot of places that were infested. Nobody complains because they're afraid they get thrown out. Where do we inspect? We've talked about this. I'm not going to go over this again. All the different places. I think I have some pictures. This is from Mike Potter's article in PCT. This is a really good training tool. We throw this up for the technicians, discuss. Even with client education, we show this. This is for apartments. And something changes when you go into a hotel where you find most of them behind the headboards. We throw this picture up and ask them to point out where are the different areas where you can see bed bugs and help them. Walk them along with this. Show the pictures, you know, that bracket where this headboard hangs on. That's a favorite spot. Behind, if there are little holes or little nail holes, you find them there. Seams of mattresses, those little plastic thingies, the labels on the box springs. You talked about checking under the drawers, the chairs. We peeled off these plastic baseboards and we found them all over there. And this was an older gentleman in an assisted living. There was an older lady two floors below who complained. We visited the place. She had some bed bugs. Then the housekeeping staff said, oh, she has a boyfriend who lives two floors above. And this was his apartment. He was not aware he was being bitten, but the place was overrun with bed bugs. We talk about bed bugs being liking wood and cardboard, and this was metal. And they were breeding in that. They had eggs there. Those are all eggs in those wheel casters. Inspect the couch. You find them in different spots near the buttons. Ceilings. Popcorn ceilings. We talked about there are cracks in there. Sometimes you find them there. This was a peculiar case. This was a very old gentleman who had a stroke and had to be taken to the hospital. And his daughter, she came to our office and she brought... He had enough guns to start a small war. And this is... And this is Wisconsin. Every grandmother has a gun. And we had a supervisor whose daughter is 6 years old. She has 8 guns. I'm not sure what she's doing with it. But this was a case where there were eggs in the pistol. And we had to fumigate the whole thing. And the hospital got scared after they took him there. And we got calls from the hospital saying they were afraid they got bed bugs too. This was another guy who was 48 years old, still living with his parents, and the waterbed full of bed bugs. They couldn't get... This was one excuse they had to move him out of the house. The socks, and we found this in those foam pads, a lot of cases where you had to peel the pads off and treat. And we all know that these are one of the things that moves bed bugs around in hotel rooms. Educating your client, pest control companies, I think, should charge. It really helps when you actually do education programs for your clients, hotels, apartments. In apartment complexes, we actually got the tenants together and we did a training program because it reduced callbacks. Or they would call you all the time, especially even if you take care of the problem, they'll still call you. So you got to set realistic expectations. Training housekeeping staff, having these fact sheets. I know that University of Kentucky has a lot of stuff that you can use. Other universities have them as well. Explain there's no quick solution. I created this course online for Copesan. And what we've done at WorldKill, the company I worked for, is technicians have to go through this program online with test, and they have to pass, send them out with a senior technician for at least 5 bed bug jobs till they know what they're doing. And then only then can they do a bed bug job. And there are companies I talked to that have special technicians who do just bed bug jobs, and that's it. You have to be committed to doing that, and not everybody can do it. Some of the questions you can ask your clients, you know, what do they look like? Especially the call comes in to the CSR, the lady behind the telephone, and it's good for them to know what kind of questions to ask, so it saves time when a technician goes to the place. Have they purchased any used furniture? Have they had recent guests? Pre-treatment responsibilities. This has helped us quite a bit. This is a checklist where you explain these are the things that the client, the tenant has to do, or if they have a maintenance crew, they have to do, or in a hotel. Tells you that these are the things they have to do. And I know Judy talked about keeping the thing out of, like the room out for 14 days. We've had issues trying to get hotel people to do that. In the smaller hotels, apartments, they want to come right back. If it's a low-income housing or a low-income apartment, they want to come back the next day or right after treatment. So we plugged in this 4 hours at least to keep them out till the stuff has dried. And a checklist of all the things they have to do. And how this has helped us is, I mean, I would walk away from something like this, but with the checklist, you have something to hang your hat on if it fails, because they've refused to do it, and if it ever goes to court, you have something that says they did not do these things, and that's why we couldn't do a thorough job. And I think one of the major companies had a lawsuit where they couldn't manage the bed bugs, and they went to court, and the judge said, let's see your treatment protocol, and let me see your invoice. It didn't match up. So the company lawyer said, don't fight it, just pay up. This is one, but we worked with this because we were able to take them all out and fumigate it so that we had an empty apartment to treat. Same thing with this. This is another issue. This looks like a war zone once you're done. So we have to explain up front to the person that this is what it's going to look like. And you'll probably have to charge a little more if you have to put it all back together. The NPMA has a contract, and we've used that and adapted it to our company. And it's really cool because you can take away stuff that you think applies to your company and use it as a contract just for bed bugs and all the things that the clients have to do. I mean, the customer has to do. It's a special contract because bed bugs are not covered with the regular pests covered for a residential or commercial treatment. I'm not going through all the details. This is something I pulled out a few years ago. I think it's still on there. You got lawyers going after this now. So they're going to sue the pest control company. You know, if they sue the hotel might want to find some scapegoat, and you may be, this pest control company may be the scapegoat. It says, if you've been bitten by bed bugs, call us and we'll help you. Planning and preparation, we talked about it. It's not a one-time job, at least 2 follow-ups. And different companies have different programs. What we've done is we charge by the number of hours it takes. There's not a cookie-cutter style, like it's going to be so much. We've treated homes for as high as $5,000. So it varies across the board. And price it right or it'll kill you. Taking stuff out, bagging. There are a lot of cases where the maintenance crew will not touch it. And the pest control people have to do these things, bagging and carrying them out. And you have to charge for that. This is from Dr. Kells, and I thought this was great, and I did ask his permission to use it before. And this is a great tool for technicians, where if you're treating a hotel room, work efficiently. So what you do, inspect, vacuum, and treat an area, and treat these items and move them into that clean area. And that way you are pretty sure that you don't miss out anything. I think this is fantastic because usually when they go in, if you're not trained, they pretty much treat all the things there. They may miss out one little dresser that may have an infestation. Treatment strategies. I cannot emphasize how important this is. Read the label, because different pesticides have different label languages. And we've seen, for example, Phantom. The retreatment interval is 28 days. There were cases where they get callbacks and they go and treat within a week, and that's against the label. And if there's ever a complaint and the state comes in and checks it out, they're in trouble. So we have the technicians undergo a label quiz review, where they have to take a little quiz on the label for the pesticides that they plan to use, and only then can they go and treat that place. Treating the existing potential harborage, dusting the voids, liquids. There is a question about IGRs. I think the jury's still out there. You can talk to Robert. I think he's done some work on that. He doesn't agree that we should add an IGR because he thinks that it doesn't work as well. But there are companies that use it. I wish there was more research done on how these different products work. We have a checklist for treatment as well. And you see that part up there. That's the important thing. It says, have the pre-treatment preparation be completed by the maintenance people. If it's no, and they still want you to treat, that helps you against liabilities in future. And we always insist that if mattresses are treated, cover it with a mattress cover. Different treatment protocols. Again, this is good to file along with your treatment invoice in case something comes up in future. This is what we did. And here's the protocol, and this just exactly fits our treatment plan. We have used Actisols before, but we haven't used them as much because we used it to flush out, to try to find out where they're hiding. But since we changed our plan to treating every existing and potential harborage, we don't flush them out as anymore. Why is this guy smiling? No PPE. He's probably inhaling all that stuff in there. Dusting the voids. We put a sign out there and keep the room closed as long as they allow us to. Can we treat the mattress? There are products labeled for the mattress. And the other options, we can either throw them out, slash them, paint them and throw them out, fumigate, steam treat our mattress covers, but make sure you get the right mattress cover. I think Rick has worked on some, and the folks at Copasan have done some research on that. There are certain brands that you can use where they do not feed through, doesn't have all these little cubby holes where the bed bugs can hide. What happens when they throw it out? Somebody's going to pick it up and take it back in. What do you do with these items? In hotels, it's pretty cheap, so they can probably throw it out. Or, I like the idea of using the Prozap, the DDVP, putting it in a bag and putting a Prozap strip in there, keeping it maybe for a week or so. We at the company I worked for, we used to suggest fumigation, especially with methyl bromide. I know it's being phased out. It helps us a great deal. You can carry them all into this container, pretty much everything in the house or apartment, and fumigate, and then treat with the residual. You have an empty house or an apartment, treat with the residual, and as you're taking the stuff, treat all the hard surfaces of like the bed or the furniture before you take it back in, so you know you have a residual. But it is expensive and not everybody can do it. Steam treatments, I know they've talked about that. Freezing with temperature, I know Steve's done a lot of work on freezing. I think it's minus 22, right, Steve? Okay. Okay. Talked to Jay Breach at Plunkett's, and they've started doing heat treatments. They bought this 20-foot ocean container. The whole setup cost them $25,000. They drag the stuff in there, and they use probes in deep into those areas which are hard to reach. And once it reaches 130 degrees for an hour, I think that's when they call it quits and they can take it back in. And this would be a green approach. Monitoring, just to detect and see if your treatment was successful, confirm that it's... This is an older picture. I don't think you need to use carbon dioxide anymore. I think Dr. Ken Haynes' research has shown that heat alone is sufficient to draw them. He's shown that as soon as they reach a heated source, they'll start probing, so that may be an option. We've used two-sided sticky tape. We've used the regular glue board, but we found that they crawl underneath, and some technicians have been creative. They've used heating pads on those little things that they use in pizza boxes so they don't flatten. They put it on the glue boards and put the heating pad on top, so the bugs apparently try to climb to that heating pad. Follow-up visits. How do we know if a treatment is successful? All these items, inspections, no live bugs, no additional bites, maybe the counts from the sticky trap, complaints from residents. Why do we fail? A lot of these things from my friends out in the audience. I think this is important. Have you educated your customer? Is it priced too low? There's no incentive to go back and treat again. Is it a one-time treatment? We've gotten calls from homes that have been treated by these fly-by-night operators, very cheap, one-time job. They made the problem worse, and then you go in and it takes a lot longer. Inspection techniques, are we missing out these low-level infestations? Again, are infested items being reintroduced? And I know there's going to be a lot of presentations on this resistance issue. It is out there. That may be one cause why your treatments are, one reason why it's failing. This was something maybe the government is going to get involved. We've seen the California guidelines. Hawaii has introduced a legislation to do the same kind of thing, promote awareness. And once this gets worse, there's going to be more of these things going on. And that's my last slide. Are there any questions? Oh. That's good. Thank you.